easiest thing is to buy some earbuds. That way the music's not so loud that anybody else can hear it. Of course, you can't hear the police telling you to freeze or drop it. So scratch that. Even if it isn't the cops, white people think they can just go ahead and shoot black people for playing their music too loudly. Remember Jordan Davis? Michael Dunn, a hot-headed middle-aged white dude, shot up a bunch of black teenagers because they didn't want to turn their music down in a gas station parking lot. So the dude shot and killed Jordan Davis and then went back to his hotel with his girlfriend. He tried to say he was threatened, but he shot at them as they were driving away. Granted, this was in Florida, where apparently you can shoot anyone if you want to stand your ground. But hey, until the law gets fixed, is it worth it to listen to Little Reese so loud? Little Reese is a lot of risk. Summary. Musical tastes vary, but white people don't want to hear music that scares them. Anything with Ringo in it is safe. Stay away from scary music like Young Thug. The harder your music is to hear, the more white people will like it. DL Log. Leave politics out of sports. The issue of kneeling has nothing to do with race. It is out of respect for our country, flag, and national anthem. NFL must respect this. If a player wants the privilege of making millions of dollars in the NFL or other leagues, he or she should not be allowed to disrespect our great American flag or country and should stand for the national anthem. And if not, you're fired. Find something else to do. Two of Donald Trump's many tweets about players kneeling during the national anthem. The most hated black man in America now that Barack is out of office must be Colin Kaepernick. Trump and other white supremacists have been driven crazy over the Kaepernick-inspired protests of police brutality, trying to paint them as unpatriotic. Unfortunately, a lot of white people who may even dislike Trump find themselves agreeing with him on this issue. They are mad that Kaepernick and the other NFL players keep injecting race and politics into sports. For them, football is about fun, not politics, and yet these highly paid NFL players won't stand during the national anthem. They say incendiary things about police violence. Come on, football isn't about violence. White people just want football players to shut the fuck up and do their jobs. So are they right? Are they injecting politics and race where it doesn't belong? Politics is for the NFL, not the NFL players. The NFL players work for the NFL. The National Football League. Does it say National Political League? No. I don't know how these players got the idea they could be political. The NFL only gets political when it promotes people joining the Army. When the Department of Defense spends $5.4 million in contracts with the NFL between 2013 and 15. I guess I'd call that political. Football has already been political. Think about it. How many times have you heard the few, the proud, the Marines during a game? But look, sometimes white people forget about stuff, as is their privilege. Maybe it's an honest mistake. I'm not going to be unfair about it and tell white people who hired a reality star to be president that they don't have the right to tell black people not to get political. I'd never do that. Let's be fair. I mean, here's the thing. Motherfuckers that sell beer and alcohol for a living like the NFL, are they in a moral position where they can judge what's right? More people die from alcohol-related injuries than almost any other preventable cause. They let a football player who killed dogs play. You let a motherfucker that got away with murder play, but you draw the line at somebody making a political stance? Do I even need to get into the concussion and CTE problem? But let's be fair. Maybe white people forgot that ESPN hired Rush Limbaugh to do commentary for the Sunday NFL Countdown. Rush Limbaugh wasn't hired to do anything but talk about football. It wasn't a political move at all. Rush was probably hired for his football expertise. So it was way out of bounds when he argued that Donovan McNabb was overrated by bringing up race. He said, "Sorry to say this, I don't think he's been that good from the get-go. I think what we've had here is a little social concern in the NFL. The media has been very desirous that a black quarterback do well. There's a little hope invested in McNabb, and he got a lot of credit for the performance of a team that he didn't deserve. The defense carried this team." So maybe the same people who are mad at Colin Kaepernick for injecting politics in the football forgot that Russ basically said that if McNabb were white, he would just be an ordinary quarterback. Oh, they must have forgotten about that. Kaepernick is ostracized from the league because he wanted to draw people's attention to injustice. The same league that hired Rush Limbaugh, who made political statements all the time as a commentator, to talk about black people whom he denigrates all the time on his radio show. He once told a caller, look, let me put it to you this way. The NFL all too often looks like a game between the Bloods and the Crips without any weapons. There, I said it. You can't put a racist like Rush Limbaugh around that many niggas and think he ain't gonna say something to let you know how he thinks. And Hank Williams Jr. is back on Monday Night Football after comparing Obama to Hitler. Hank Williams is a racist, but I gotta admit, that's the best football theme music I've ever heard. Nothing says are you ready for football like people that hate niggas. But that song was so good, even black people are like, hey, bring that nigga back. Come on now. But I digress. I'm just saying that maybe when the NFL criticizes Kaepernick as too political, they should remember who brought politics into the sport in the first place. Leave it on the field. And what about race? Mike Dicker just said there's been no oppression of black people in 100 years. Jim Crow just ended. I was born in 1964, and I am the first one of my mother's children that was born with the full rights of an American citizen. No oppression of black people? White people like Dicker only see what they want to. They make up their own reality. The reason they can't see racism or oppression is that they never look behind them. If they're not certain what oppression is, they're looking in the wrong places. Look behind you. They think that racism and oppression are irrelevant if you're paid enough. They're all saying, why are these football players protesting? They're all rich. Here's the thing with that. What's that common bit of sports advice? Leave it on the field? Well, we can't. Because the very attributes that people applaud on the field, speed, size, agility, are the same things that get you killed off it. He's built like a bull, walked 50 feet off that field, and that shit ain't an attribute. The same shit they hire you for in the NFL is the same shit that gets you killed out of it. Recently, the Seattle Seahawks' Michael Bennett was in Vegas when the cops ran up to him, jammed him up, and pulled guns on him. They yelled, "Don't move, motherfucker! I'll blow your head off." And he didn't do anything except be who he is, a big black dude. He found out that you can never score so many touchdowns or tackle so many runners or kick so many field goals or blitz so many quarterbacks that you ain't a threat anymore. The very things he's cheered for on Sunday are the very things that could get him killed on Monday. Being a big, black, fast dude is great on the field. Off the field, it might get you shot. So white people want us to leave sports on the field, but leave race off of it. How? This time, Michael Bennett didn't get shot. But like he said, cops pulled guns on him for doing nothing more than simply being a black man in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know what the wrong place at the wrong time is? Being black anywhere at any time. If you put big, strong, fast, agile, fearsome, high-paying tolerance on a draft board, you would go high in the draft. You put that on a police report, and the grand jury is gonna acquit him. It's almost like for football players, being big and strong is not an attribute because big, strong niggas get shot first. So after the game is over, they should chuck all that size, speed, and ferocity, and they should fucking turn it into Kevin Hart. For white people, the game of football is a distraction from their everyday life. That's fine, but even though it's a game to a lot of people, it's a game played by black men. On the field, there are other people trying to hurt them all the time. Off the field, there are people trying to hurt them. There's no break for them. One is a game, and one is a game of life. So race is always going to be a part of football for black people, whether Mike Dicker or Jerry Jones wishes it weren't true. Hell, you'd think the NFL owners would hate police shootings because they're shooting the crop. One man's suspected terrorist is another man's first-round draft pick. If you're a big black guy, don't be. Police didn't just jam up Michael Bennett because they're racist. That idea is so upsetting to white people. They think innocent people don't get slammed to the ground and get guns pulled on them. Police jammed Michael Bennett up because he matched the description of a shooting suspect. It seems like that happens a lot. We have another case of a big black dude matching the description. Who wouldn't be afraid of a big black dude? That's the subtext. That's the justification for the cops treating him and many other innocent black people the way they do. He's a big black guy, so he must be dangerous. He must have done something. So what's the solution? Get small. If you're big, look smaller. In the animal kingdom, if you're confronted with a superior hunter, An apex predator, your goal is to be so threatening that the animal doesn't want to take a chance on attacking you. If it's a bear or a mountain lion, they always say, look bigger, try to be intimidating. A cop is the ultimate apex predator, and everything that works in nature, throw it all out. In nature, don't show fear, be intimidating. Here, no, show fear, don't be intimidating. In nature, look them in the eye. Here, don't look them in the eye. Don't get big, get small. You can't get small enough for the police. At least he didn't get shot. Well, at least he didn't get shot. That's good, right? I mean, here the police were investigating a shooting and slammed an innocent man to the ground and put a gun at his face, but at least they didn't shoot and kill him. They were just doing their jobs. That's society's attitude about it. Nobody got killed, and you gotta admit, Michael Bennett is that big, scary black dude at a club in Vegas after a boxing fight. That's dodgy as hell. Let's do a thought experiment. Imagine if Tom Brady got thrown to the ground in Boston, a gun put to his head. In Boston, they would tear that fucking city down. If you ever want to see if the reaction to violence against black people is muted, just do a little substitution. Tom Brady for Michael Bennett. There you go. It's like asking, what if Obama did what Trump did? There'd be rioting in the streets. The answer is so clear, it's only acceptable because of the color of his skin. Okay, but take a different athlete. James Blake, a top-ranked former tennis player in town for the U.S. Open in 2015. He's 6'1", but not football player big. He's a tennis player. A tennis player hanging outside his nice hotel in Midtown Manhattan in the middle of the day. And a bunch of undercover cops roll up and question him. Before he knows it, cops are slamming him to the ground and cuffing him just like they did to Bennett. I mean, nothing can be safer than the U.S. Open, right? That is probably the safest major sports event in America. There's not that many black people there, usually just the Williams sisters. So there's nobody to be afraid of. It's not like at the NBA All-Star game in Vegas. People drinking mint juleps and shit. Why are the cops so beefed up during the U.S. Open? They weren't there for a shooting. They weren't there for a stabbing. They were there for somebody writing bad checks or something. So do you need to tackle somebody for writing bad checks and slam them to the ground? Even if you're not slamming the totally wrong guy to the ground, not even slamming James Blake, why do you need to slam a bad check-writing suspect to the ground? Both James Blake and Michael Bennett know that they got lucky. Even though they didn't do anything wrong, they didn't get shot. Bennett, by the way, is still waiting for his apology. Why? Apparently the cops can treat black people like that without showing any contrition. In fact, the Vegas Police Officers Union believe they are the ones owed an apology. So, remind me again why athletes are supposed to steer clear of politics. Chapter 15. Stop making white people say the N-word. Popular culture becomes a cesspool. A lot of corporations profit off of it. And then people are surprised that some drunk 19-year-old kids repeat what they've been hearing. Bill Kristol defending the fraternity brothers of SAE for chanting, "There will never be a nigger SAE," by blaming rap music. Here we have white conservative pundit Bill Kristol grappling with the N-word. It's very confusing for white people. They know they can't say the N-word, but why do black people get to say it? Some white kids, like the frat boys of SAE, try to say they learned the N-word from hip-hop. I mean, if white kids listen to hip-hop music by black musicians, isn't it possible that they learned the N-word from them? Sure. So, in a way, black people are to blame for white people saying nigger. Maybe white people wouldn't say it if they didn't hear it so much. First of all, they can't be serious. Nigger has been in the American lexicon since the early 1700s. Hip-hop been around since 1975. What came first, nigger or the Sugar Hill Gang? Who came first, Grandmaster Flash or Mark Twain? White people don't need hip-hop to teach them this word. I was doing a show at Florida State, and they had a deaf interpreter doing sign language next to me. I said nigger, and her hands didn't stop flying around. Every language in the world knows how to say nigger. It seems more likely that the frat brothers of SAE learned it in the same way most white people learn it, from being fucking racist. The SAE charter used to explicitly require that brothers be members of the Caucasian race. So maybe they learned this song full of N-words from their brothers, not some other brothers. Who can say the N-word? Fucking black people, that's it. Who should say the N-word? Nobody. Let's remember this is a book of advice from white people. So even though you're allowed to say the N-word, white people would rather you did not. And nowadays, white people have more subtle ways of describing black folks than to say the N-word. If you want to talk white, try some of these on. Thug. Ghetto. Sketchy. Urban. Ethnic. That way, you can still mean nigga without offending a white person. Summary. White people find the N-word confusing. Nobody learned the N-word from hip-hop since it's been around since the 1700s, but damn, that would be a cool idea for a movie. Ghostface goes back in time to teach the N-word to the colonists. If you're white, don't say it. If you're black, use one of white people's code words, or go ahead and N-word all you want. Let's meet Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly, where to begin? When you think of the most hypocritical, angry old white guy you could think of, you gotta think of old Bill here. How many years did he spend on Fox News talking shit about black people in every possible way, acting superior when in fact he was a serial sexual predator? The dude is mad at everybody but himself. He paid $32 million to settle a sexual harassment suit and then pretended to be the victim. As an old white guy, he's in the most protected group that exists, but he said about his enemies, if they could literally kill me, they would. And then he said, you know, am I mad at God? Yeah, I'm mad at him. I wish I had more protection. I wish this stuff didn't happen. I can't explain it to you. Yeah, I'm mad at him. So if God is mad at you, what chance do niggas have? Black people didn't even get mad at God for slavery, and I mean nobody praises God more than black people. Nobody. But even white prayers must be different. They must speak at a different frequency, like a dog whistle or something. Don't feel protected. God was doing his job protecting them from you. That $32 million is protection money. But look, Bill O'Reilly has always had a skewed perspective, trying to tell black people about race and what's racist or not. Look, if we let white people decide, we'll never get anywhere. We tried that already. Bill O'Reilly even tried to defend slavery when Michelle Obama talked about the slaves who built the White House. She gave the keynote speech at the first night of the Democratic National Convention in 2016 saying, I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves, and I watch my daughters, two beautiful, intelligent black young women, playing with their dogs on the White House lawn. And because of Hillary Clinton, my daughters and all our sons and daughters now take for granted that a woman can be president of the United States. So don't let anyone ever tell you that this country isn't great, that somehow we need to make it great again, because this right now is the greatest country on earth. Pretty inspiring. Black people built the White House as slaves, and now they're in charge. But Bill O'Reilly had to make sure that everybody knew that slavery wasn't that bad. On his show, The O'Reilly Factor, he gave us a history lesson. Slaves that worked there were well-fed and had decent lodgings provided by the government, which stopped hiring slave labor in 1802, he said. However, the feds did not forbid subcontractors from using slave labor, so Michelle Obama is essentially correct in citing slaves as builders of the White House, but there were others working as well. Well-fed, decent lodgings, room and board, just like college. Maybe they got to throw the frisbee around in the quad between work assignments. Sign me up. Bill thinks black people are savages. When he went to Sylvia's in Harlem with Al Sharpton, he couldn't get over the fact that there was no difference between Sylvia's restaurant and any other restaurant in New York. I mean, it was exactly the same, even though it was run by blacks, primarily black patronship. There wasn't one person in Sylvia's who was screaming, MF-er, I want some iced tea. I'd say the latest dismissal from Fox would mean that we won't be seeing much of O'Reilly anymore, but nobody's been given more second chances than this cat. Chapter 16, How to Not Come from a Single Parent Household. Don't abandon your children. Don't get pregnant at 14. Don't allow your neighborhoods to deteriorate into free fire zones. That's what the African-American community should have on their t-shirts. Bill O'Reilly, prior to losing primary custody of his children after allegedly abusing his ex-wife. White people like Bill O'Reilly are always citing single-parent households as a major problem in the black community. In 2013, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention presented data indicated that in almost 72% of births to black women, the women were unmarried. Statistics like that get white people asking, is there something wrong with black culture? Black children need fathers in their lives. Why don't they marry? White people get unhappily married all the time. Why don't black people? Don't wait for Mr. Right. If you're looking to meet a nice black man to marry, the odds are stacked against you. Why? Because you can't marry somebody who isn't there. Because black men are killed or put in prison at a higher rate, there are only about 83 black men for every 100 black women. Why? In some places, it's even higher, like in Ferguson, Missouri, where there are 60 men for every 100 black women. Let's face it, ladies. If you want to marry a black man, you can't be too picky. There are only so many black men who are not in prison or dead. Marry a prisoner. Almost 1 in 12 black men between the ages of 25 and 54 are behind bars. That's a lot of eligible bachelors behind doors number 1, 2, 3, and so on. For non-black men, it's only 1 in 60. Strict mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines, zero tolerance policies in schools, and heavier policing in communities of color disproportionately affect black men. Consequently, more black men are in prison. Then, when they get out of prison, they naturally have trouble finding work, so they may turn to a life of crime, but they have kids. This becomes a vicious cycle. You can't have a nation that incarcerates this many black men and not have this impact on children and marriage rates. So if you don't want to be one of the unmarried black women with a baby, get ready to find a prison pen pal. If you like it, then you better put a ring on it. When Bill O'Reilly criticizes unmarried women giving birth, he's missing something. Fewer and fewer black women are marrying their partners. People are living together, but unmarried. So that's one way to have an unwed birth, but not be in a single parent household. And it also turns out that married black women are having fewer babies, so the proportion of births to unwed mothers is higher. Now, maybe Bill thinks that everyone should get married, but should we take marriage advice from a man who was fired by Fox for multiple sexual harassment suits, many of which were settled so as not to endanger his messy custody battle with his ex-wife? Black dads, step up. Despite what Fox tells you, black fathers are good fathers. The CDC tells us that black fathers are the most involved with their children compared to any other group of fathers. For fathers living with their children, 70% bathed, diapered, or dressed their young children each day compared with 60% of white fathers. And 34% read to their kids compared to 30% of white fathers. Even that Fox and Sox crap, and that shit is annoying. Summary. White people don't know much about single-parent households unless they make the mistake of marrying Bill O'Reilly. But if you want to avoid being in one, you're going to have to make do with the black men who haven't been killed or put in prison. Don't be too picky. The good news is, it's worth the effort. Black men make great fathers. Chapter 17. What to name your kids. It's so important to make a good first impression, but people sometimes see your name before they see your face, like on a resume or in an email. That's why it's vital that you name your kids correctly. Yes, white people can continue to get away with naming their children Brittany or Newt Gingrich without fucking up their futures, but you're black. Black people can't name their kids just anything. Stereotypically, black names cause a lot of problems. A recent study showed that teachers think students with black names are troublemakers. When a child named Deshaun or Latoya was described as misbehaving, he or she was judged to be more severe misbehaving than when a child was named Jake or Emily. Latoya always was kind of a troublemaker, though in hindsight, Michael had a few too many sleepovers. And it hurts your job prospects, too. The more ethnic or urban your name sounds, the more likely your application is to go right in the trash. A 2014 study showed that names like Emily Walsh and Greg Baker got called back for job interviews almost 50% more than names like Lakeisha Washington or Jamal Jones. Researchers found that having a white-sounding name is worth about 8 years of work experience. Okay, maybe you want your kid's name to mean something. I get it. My name is Daryl. That means beloved. My manager's name is Gary. That means warrior. But Daquan means not hiring. Black names sound dangerous too. A different study showed that changing the name of a character in a story from Connor to Jamal made participants perceive the character as more aggressive, bigger, and less successful. They perceive white-sounding names as more successful, even a dude named Garrett. If Garrett is more successful than you, you got a problem. In their best-selling book, Freakonomics, Stephen D. Levitt and Stephen J. Dubner had lists of the top white and black-sounding names. 20 whitest girl names, Molly, Amy, Claire, Emily, Katie, Madeline, Caitlin, Emma, Abigail, Carly, Jenna, Heather, Catherine, Caitlin with a C, Caitlin with a K, Holly, Allison, Caitlin again, this time with a Y, Hannah, and Catherine with a Y. 20 blackest girl names, Imani, Ebony, Shanice, Aaliyah, Precious, Nia, Deja, Diamond, Asia, Aaliyah with one A, Jada, Tierra, Tiara, Kiara, Alexis, Raven, and Jasmine is very popular and can be spelled four different ways, apparently. 20 whitest boy names, Jake, Connor, Tanner, Wyatt, Cody, Dustin, Luke, Jack, Scott, Logan, Cole, Lucas, Bradley, Jacob, Garrett, Dylan, Maxwell, Hunter, Brett, Colin. 20 blackest boy names, Deshaun, DeAndre, Marquise, Darnell, Terrell, Malik, Trayvon, Tyrone, Willie, Dominique, Demetrius, Reginald, Jamal, Maurice, Jalen, Darius, Xavier, Terrence, Andre, Daryl. So what to do? Name your kids something white. I've compiled a helpful list of black names and their white name equivalents. If you want to name your kid Deshaun, for example, why not name him Steve? Go ahead and try it out. Of course, if you're famous, you can do whatever you want. Northwest? You gotta be famous to name your kid after your freaking Flyer Miles card. Blue Ivy? That's a supervillain name. But that's what you can do when you're famous. That's why if I have a few more kids, their names will be Resistance, Stand Up, and D.L. Hughley, the official app. List of black names and their white alternatives. Black name, Darnell. White alternative, Dustin. Black name, Jamal. White alternative, Jack. Black name, Aaliyah. White alternative, Abigail. Black name, Jasmine. White alternative, Catherine. Black name, Darius. White alternative, Chris Wallace. Black name, Jada. White alternative, Kellyanne Conway. Black name, Malik. White name, Reince Priebus. Black name, Tiara. White alternative, Ivanka Trump. Bias starts early and deep. Assuming this book was too late to get you to change your name to Logan, you probably have a black name. So we know that that name will fuck you. What's messed up is that bias starts very early in school, and that's true whether you have a black teacher or a white teacher. There's no discernible difference between the biases that white female teachers have and the biases that black female teachers have. Those biases start to dictate how you're perceived in school. A recent study of implicit bias in teachers showed that teachers expect black boys to be disruptive, so they look for it. A group of teachers was shown four kids playing and to watch for bad behavior. There was a black boy, a black girl, a white girl, and a white boy. The trick was that none of the kids were doing anything wrong. But measurements of the teacher's eye movement showed that all the teachers watched the black boy most often. According to the Department of Education, black children are almost four times more likely to be suspended from preschool. Preschool? How do you get suspended from preschool? Coloring outside the lines? Come on. People have this notion that black kids are bad in school, and indeed there's a test score gap between white and black students that persists. And why are black kids bad at school? Black kids perform at a higher level than any other ethnicity in parochial schools. But how you are perceived becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if this bias starts out early, how do you fix it? If you want to prevent the school-to-prison pipeline, you need to hire more black male teachers. Studies have shown that having just one black male teacher in third, fourth, or fifth grade can reduce the probability of a black boy dropping out of high school by 39%. So there's a big push to get more black male teachers. But where the fuck did we put those black males so they could become teachers? All right, we put them in prison. Our bad. Wise words. Segregation is not a humiliation, but a benefit, and ought to be so regarded by you gentlemen. Woodrow Wilson, 28th President of the United States, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and racist. Stuff white people say. MAGA man number two, give Trump a chance. But DL, at least Trump tried to reach out to the black community. Most Republicans don't even bother. They know black people only vote for Democrats, but at least Trump tried. You have to give him credit for that. During the 2016 presidential campaign, Trump made his pitch to black America. What the hell have you got to lose? You're living in poverty, your schools are no good, you have no jobs, 58% of your youth is unemployed. What the hell do you have to lose? Despite this inspiring message, Trump only received 8% of black votes. 8%. You could get more than 8% of black people to vote for the Confederate flag. But to Trump's point, what the hell do we have to lose? What the hell do we have to gain? What has Trump done that would make us think that he understands the black community at all? It's interesting, because even in his first few weeks of office, his actions were insulting. He met with Kanye West, Jim Brown, Ray Lewis, and Steve Harvey, a rapper, two football players, and a comedian. It sounds like the beginning of a fucking knock-knock joke, doesn't it? Why'd he do that? Because those are the positions he's used to seeing us black folk in. If Donald Trump cared about black people, he wouldn't have denigrated President Obama with his birtherism. He wouldn't have spent years stoking racist fears by saying this man is less than and that he's not one of us, just so Trump himself could become president. He'd rather black people be football players, comedians, and rappers than see us be president. Next time, maybe he should bring David Copperfield in to make all our problems magically disappear. Our racist president. Even after Trump referred to immigrants from Haiti and Africa as coming from shithole countries, some white people continued to claim he's not racist. How is it that white men can be the experts on racism when not one of them has been called nigger before? America has always needed poor brown people to do our physical labor, poor brown people to do our intellectual labor. But Trump wonders why we can't have more people come from places like Norway. Why would they? They live better there. Europeans come to America like you go to the circus to see the fucking animals. That's why. You come to shop, take a picture where Brad Pitt slept, and to see the fucking animals. It's a tour. You're not coming to live here. People try to excuse Trump's racism by saying that he's just talking about the economic conditions of the countries where immigrants come from. But you can't call a place a shithole country when you live in Appalachia. You can't make the argument when you live in a solid block of poverty. You broke to broke people. When we're talking about exceptional America, that ain't you. Broke white people are living off rich white people's reputation. Our first affirmative action president. Give Trump a chance. Isn't it funny how the best qualified person should get the job unless it comes to Trump? It shouldn't be about anything other than qualifications, except with him. Trump is America's first blatant affirmative action president. He's incompetent, doesn't know the job, has no qualifications, but he got hired because of the color of his skin. He's the nigga everybody thought Obama would be. Gaudy and loud, incompetent, lazy, emotional, flies off the handle, angry, unintelligent, not bright, lots of kids by different people, cheats on his wife, and talks a lot of shit. All the shit you ascribe to black people, he does all that shit. He's America's first nigga, so no, I won't be giving Trump a chance. Chapter 18, How to Get a Job. White people say they built America, but really white people only supervise. They made up the schedules and gave out the work assignments. Hey niggas, you're on cotton. Hey chinks, you got the railroads. Irish, you sober up and dig some tunnels. And now in America, we have poor brown people who do our physical labor, Mexicans. We have poor brown people who do our intellectual labor, Indians. If you're not willing to work as hard as a Mexican and you're not as smart as an Indian, you're fucked. If you won't pick strawberries and you can't write an app, you're fucked. But this exploitation of brown people is getting worrisome to white people. These are jobs that they might want if they knew how to do them. They don't want to do them, and they don't know how to do them, but they might someday. That's a big reason white people voted for Trump. They wanted those factory jobs back. Never mind that if the factories come back, it's not going to be Mexicans they got to worry about. It's robots. Automation replaces more jobs than immigrants. So they would rather turn back the clock 70 years to the industrial age and take a night class? They didn't need Trump. They needed DeVry. When white people aren't mad about illegals, they're busy painting black people as shiftless, welfare state layabouts who don't know how to get a job. But with a giant border wall on the horizon and Trump cock-blocking brothers from shithole countries, America might face a shortage of brown people. It's time to reconsider black people. The right fit. When white people are considering applicants, when they're talking about people they want to work with, they always throw around terms like the right fit or being a team player. The right fit usually means someone who's like them, that is, white. He didn't seem like a team player, but we all play for teams all the time. We're probably some of your favorite players on the team. So black people can be a player on the team, but not a team player. Okay, even if you wanted to believe racism wasn't a factor, multiple studies have found that anti-black hiring hasn't changed much at all since at least 1989. However, it looks like anti-Latino hiring is up, so welcome aboard. I wonder who could be driving anti-Latino sentiments. The black unemployment rate is consistently higher than the white unemployment rate. Black household wealth is lower than white household wealth. Median income is lower for blacks. It all makes you wonder what could be making this all be true, if not racism. And since white people are the ones hiring most often, we still got a problem. Dialogue, make America great again. MAGA, make America great again. That is some bullshit. When was America great again? What time period are we trying to bring it back to? In the history of our experience in America, it's interesting how often white people say shit like, we want our country back. Well, when you had the country to yourself, you brought niggas in because you didn't want to do the work. What time do you want to go back to? I mean, white people weren't doing great until we came along. That's just true. The original colonists were always dying of some swamp disease or relying on handouts from Native Americans. You don't like welfare? Well, what do you think the pilgrims were getting from Squanto? He didn't have food stamps, so he passed out turkeys. So you white people were struggling, but you couldn't mind your own damn business, could you? Nah, motherfuckers, you had to come get us. We didn't say, I wonder what's going on in America. We didn't ask you, but you insisted we find out. And then you freed the niggas. You bought over the Chinese. You said, who else can we get now? Once you got your railroads sorted out, you bought the Irish, the Italians, and so on. You always needed new poor people, but eventually some of those people said, I don't want that shit. I don't want to be a nigga anymore. So they started hating the next bunch off the boat. So if Irish and Italians are white people now, that's just because they found some new niggas, Mexicans and Arabs. When white people say make America great again, all they're saying is make sure we got someone to do the work. The thing about make America great again is this. Trump voters want America to be what it used to be. We black and brown folks wanted to become what was promised. You look back, we look forward. Because for us, America was just beginning to get okay when Trump came along. In 2020, I'm printing new hats. Make America okay again. Anecdote. Crayons are for white people. America is built for white people. Everything revolves around them, so they never have to think of what it's like to be different. When I was a kid and I was in school, they had these crayons, flesh-colored crayons, and we never used them. I went to an all-black school in Los Angeles, and the only time we used a flesh-colored crayon was to draw the police or the insurance man, and those are some sad fucking drawings. What's this a drawing of? It's my mama talking to the insurance man about life insurance, and the police are trying to arrest me. very good, DL. How about drawing a flower next time? So when we wanted to draw our parents or each other, we had to mix a bunch of colors together. Orange and black, purple and brown, because everything is geared for white people. Everybody else has to adjust. Nowadays, flesh-colored crayons are relabeled peach. And in 1992, Crayola put out a set of multicultural crayons that came in an assortment of skin hues that give a child a realistic palette for coloring their world. The crayon colors are black, sepia, peach, apricot, white, tan, mahogany, and burnt sienna. Now, I know some black people, but I still got to share crayons with apricot people and burnt sienna people that I've never even seen. That's what I'm saying. Everything is built for peach people. Chapter 19. Stop taking handouts. Right now, about 60% of American people get more benefits in dollar value from the federal government than they pay in taxes. So we're going to a majority of takers versus makers. Paul Ryan. Nothing gets white people agitated like the welfare state. Why should our money be given to others who don't need it? Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's something I can definitely agree with white people on. Let's start dismantling the welfare state. I just might disagree about where to start. Let's start with football. Have you ever noticed how the same people who hate welfare also seem to love football? I wonder if they realize that professional football is really local socialism. What I mean is the taxpayers are subsidizing these teams. The city, for instance, often pays for the arena. Since 1997, NFL teams have built 20 new stadiums with $5 billion of taxpayer funds. They get tax breaks on construction using municipal bonds that were created to fund roads and schools, not sports stadiums. Cities give them property tax breaks, police to patrol the stadiums, and other city services. And even though the NFL makes around $1 billion in profits, up until 2015, it was also a nonprofit. When Congress was revising its rules around nonprofits, lobbyists inserted the phrase professional football leagues into the IRS code. Even though teams are for-profit, the league itself was treated like it was some kind of charity instead of a corporation. NFL headquarters administered the league and its TV contracts, making insane amounts of money, paying its executives absurd salaries. Roger Goodell was paid $35 billion in 2013, but paid no income tax. Sounds like a huge parasite on the system to me. And then, flood insurance. Flood insurance is very interesting. For instance, if you buy a house in the flood zone and you're buying insurance from a carrier, you pay $1,500 a year. But you should be paying $9,000 to $15,000 a year. Why the discount? Because you have the government subsidizing flood insurance, and it's running at a $25 billion deficit. Politico recently called flood insurance the government's hidden housing subsidy for the rich. Why? Well, have you ever checked out real estate listings for beachfront property? Not cheap. And by the way, a lot of these houses are vacation homes. The people on the Hamptons, Martha's Vineyard, and the Outer Banks who build their houses in areas that they know are risky, what do they get? They get FEMA-backed insurance, right? What is that? Which is what? Welfare. Welfare don't just come in food stamps or a block of cheese. $25 billion? That's a hell of a block of cheese. Fuck that cheese. I want the cheddar. Of course, just because your shit floods, that doesn't mean they're gonna put it back for you, even if FEMA is there to help. In New Orleans, they didn't figure out how to replace that shit. In Houston, they are. In New Orleans, the parts of the city that got flooded were poor and black, and a lot of them have still not recovered. Houston is more well-to-do. It's the fourth largest city in the country, and it flooded because they refused to admit that the entire fucking city is a flood zone. Rather than listen to environmentalists, they decided to build Mother Nature a pool. Every other region of the country that receives this increase in inclement weather has adjusted for it. In New Jersey, they build their houses higher. California, they make them earthquake resistant. Texas, I'm gonna do what I want because I'm Texas strong. Well, that's nice, but I don't want my hard-earned tax dollars going to headstrong welfare deadbeats like flood insurance recipients. Who gets welfare? Corporations. So when conservatives say they don't like welfare, they're being selective. Insurance companies get money. Pharmaceutical companies get money. Petroleum companies get money. Agricultural companies get money. They all get money. But they don't want to give a nigga a food stamp? You want to cut school lunches, but not cut the $13 billion Boeing got from government subsidies. That's how much state and local subsidies Boeing received over the last 15 years, according to a 2015 report by Good Jobs First. What about General Motors? Their $3.5 billion is a lot of money that could be in taxpayers' pockets instead. I don't want my money going to support these drags on society. If we didn't subsidize some of these companies, they'd fail. I mean, Take some individual responsibility. The surprising face of welfare. Poor white people get more food stamps percentage-wise than us, but we're the fucking poster child? In 2014, government assistance and tax credits helped 6.2 million working-class whites out of poverty. More than any other group, about half of the adults without a college degree that those programs help are white. And food stamps weren't started to help poor black folks. They were started during the Great Depression, but became the program that they are today because grocery store owners like the income. Grocery chains still get increased sales during recessions. Half of all food stamp recipients are children, and most of the households receiving food stamps include children, elderly, or people with disabilities. So yes, I agree. There are too many people sucking at America's teat. Too many poor whites, old people, and children. It's expensive being poor. It costs so much to be poor that nobody can afford to do it. Poor people pay for all sorts of common household expenses, like groceries. Why? Well, let's take one example. Toilet paper. The University of Michigan did a study that showed that poor households are less likely to be able to save money by buying in bulk. They have less money to put up front to buy in bulk, and they're less likely to have access to big box discount stores that have better deals. Because of this, low-income households pay 6% extra per sheet. Only in America could you be too poor to wipe your ass. You stink. I'm broke. Poor people pay more for car insurance regardless of their driving record. In 2016, the Consumer Federation of America found that poor drivers pay an average of $681 more a year than drivers with a higher economic status. Add in overdraft fees, minimum balance requirements, and predatory lending practices, and it's easy to see why being poor can make you broke. So we know that being poor costs you. If you're saying, I don't want you wasting my tax dollars and having babies, well, let's talk about it. Let's talk about why football stadiums, rich people, and corporations are getting welfare while we still have 5.3 million people who are poor in America. Let's talk about why the Mississippi Delta region and Appalachia have lower life expectancies than Bangladesh and Vietnam. Remember, racism is a dangerous operation. America is like a shooting victim with a bullet near his spine on a medical drama. Let's call it heartbeat. The bullet in this instance is racism. So this racist bullet is precariously positioned so that removing it might kill the victim. America. And look, there's a bunch of doctors, both black and white. The black doctors are like, we gotta get this bullet out or America might die. And the white doctors are like, let's just leave it there. Removing it might actually be more dangerous. And meanwhile, America is bleeding out on the table. And then that shit gets canceled after one season? Come on now. Chapter 20. How to move into a white neighborhood. White people like to live where they want on their own terms. First, they got agitated by an influx of black people into cities. After blacks moved out of the rural South in the 20th century, whites practically abandoned cities and hightailed it to the suburbs, gutting urban areas of its tax base. In one of the most extreme cases, Washington, D.C. went from 25% black in 1920 to 70% in 1980. White flight is real. I saw it myself. In my kindergarten class picture, there were two or three horrified-looking white kids. By the time I got to the third grade, they were all gone, never to be seen again. You remember See Dick and Jane Run? You would see Dick and Jane, but by the time I was in the third grade, Dick and Jane had run for real. And now they want back into the cities, displacing well-established black and Latino communities through gentrification. Gentrification is where white people who were scared of niggas move in with us. But what I'm talking about is black people moving into areas they historically never lived in, the suburbs. Black people are moving there for the same reason they moved from the South, for better opportunities for them and their children. But white people aren't used to that yet. A lot of bad things happen when black people move into neighborhoods and white people don't know them. One of the biggest ways that people get shot is that neighbors call the police on a stranger. Don't be a stranger. You have to introduce yourself to neighbors and make sure that everybody in the neighborhood knows who you are, but in a good way. Not because you're playing loud music or because they're scared of you. The welcome wagon. Traditionally, when someone new moves into the neighborhood, people bring some kind of housewarming gift. Maybe a pie. Well, in this case, I wouldn't wait for the welcome wagon. You might need to hitch the wagon yourself and bring it to them. Sort of a reverse welcome wagon. This is not like reverse racism. It actually does exist. And it can save your life. So try bringing a pie or some fresh baked cookies around to each one of your new neighbors. Remember to not forget your keys. Even if they've done a great job and bought pies around the hood and you mention neighbors a bunch of times, don't be surprised if they don't remember you after it turns dark. At night, it's a different story. You don't want to be the black guy who forgot his keys and is standing around in front of his door, fumbling around in the dark. Remember when Henry Louis Gates got arrested on his own porch and had to go have a beer summit with Obama and the shithead who arrested him? Whatever you do, don't go knocking on your neighbor's doors in the dark. Don't need help. Remember Renisha McBride? She knocked on a guy's door for help and he blew her head off. Or what about Jonathan Ferrell, injured in a car accident, in a concussion, staggering around, the police shot him after he knocked on a woman's door for help? Always remember to not forget your keys. If you come to your door and you realize you don't have your keys, just walk away. Come back tomorrow when the neighbors are at work and it's daytime. A surefire way to get white people to remember you. How do you get white people to remember you then? Maybe get a dog. White people love dogs. And even if they don't remember your name, they'll remember you're the black guy with the dog. You're Sparky's owner. So not a pit bull, maybe a lab. Better yet, get a small dog, a Bichon Frise. White people love furry dogs with bows in their hair, or dogs with bandanas tied around them. They like that. Bandanas around your dog's neck and bedazzled leashes and shit like that. You want a dog you can accessorize, but not with a spike collar. Think of a funny little dog, one that can catch a frisbee and bring it back, one that can shake hands and roll over. Nice, friendly tricks. If you want to be extra safe, a rescue dog is the best kind. Then you can tell the story of how you saved your dog's life. I just couldn't stand to see an innocent dog put to death like that. Hashtag all dogs matter. White people love rescue dogs. And the best kind of rescue dogs are the ones with wheels. If you can score yourself a dog with wheels, they will never forget you then. You saved his life, and now he'll save yours. That's my black neighbor with the dog with the wheels. Everybody knows him. He's a great guy. Nobody wants a dog with wheels, but that guy did. Summary. Being the new black guy in a white neighborhood can be dangerous. Make sure people know who you are. Bring a daytime pie around. If you lose your keys, find a new place to live, just walk away. A little dog with no legs can be a lifesaver. Every time those little wheels squeak, a white person smiles. Part 4, understanding white people. You still with me? You haven't been shot? Great! If you made it this far in the book, I've got you looking and acting whiter than ever before. But let's face it, that's all surface level stuff. There's still a lot of stuff about white people that's hard to understand. Sometimes they say such stupid shit, it's hard to figure out what the fuck they're talking about. In this section, we'll dive into some of the ways white people think about race when they do. We'll make sure that you're not a reverse racist and you're not playing the race card. And we'll talk about black people that white people actually like for a change. If you're ready to try to dig into the white mind, let's get started on understanding white people. Chapter 21. What kind of black people do white people like? One of the things to understand about white people is that they don't hate all black people. This is an unfortunate stereotype that will make it harder for us to understand them and learn from them. Let's face it, there are some black people that they like. It's just that white people will never pick a nigga that black people like. That's why it seems like they don't like any black people. Because the black people they like aren't black people that black people like. White people have bad taste in black people. It's as if white people say, I'm white, but if I were a black guy, I'd be that black guy. That's the guy they like. You know, white black guys. Black guys that always make them feel fine about being white. They always agree with him. Someone who reminds them of themselves. They pick Herman Cain, they pick Ben Carson, they pick Clarence Thomas. Some of the black people that white people like might be more welcome at a Klan rally than a black church. Let's not test that theory, though. Case study. Clarence Thomas, a good black guy. For black people, Thurgood Marshall was the most successful jurist of his time. He'd argued before the Supreme Court successfully so many times they just said, you know what, let's give this nigga a job. Historians still look at his rulings and writings. He was integral to writing opinions. Now that's a black person that black people like. Thurgood Marshall died in 1993, and white people replaced him with Clarence Thomas. The main thing to know about Clarence Thomas is that he's never said a fucking thing. Clarence Thomas has been so silent, if he didn't take pictures with the Supreme Court justices, they would think he was a black janitor there photobombing them. Last year, he broke a 10-year silence on the court to ask a few questions. It's crazy, but that's the nigga white people like, the quiet one. Case study, Ben Carson, a bad but then good black guy. Ben Carson is another. White people love Ben Carson. Trump even named him to his cabinet. Why the fuck do whites like Ben Carson? Ben Carson embodies the pull yourself up by the bootstraps ethos that white people fetishize even though they don't have to do that much themselves. He rose from poverty to become the first neurosurgeon to separate conjoined twins. Basically, they like him because they can point to him and say, see, we don't need to help black folks after all. They just need to be more like Ben. Not only that, he even overcame being a thug. In 2016, when he was promoting his book, Healing Hands, running for president, he told the story of hitting his mother with a hammer and trying to stab his friend with a knife, apparently to show that he used to be a bad motherfucker. What? Most black people try to convince people they didn't do something. He tried to convince them that he did. I almost killed somebody. He was so boring, he was trying to seem like he used to be bad. How can you be president with a street rep? Good thing we dodged that bullet, right? It'd be horrible to have a weird dope as president, nor should you be Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, which is the job Trump gave him. But I guess Trump needed a black dude for that position, so why not pick a white black dude? Why isn't Obama a black guy white people like? It's ironic that white people like Ben Carson because of his inspirational story, and yet a good percentage of them can't stand Barack Obama. Let me think. I know, a black guy who was raised by a single mother, who ascended to Harvard, has a great marriage, bright children, is a brilliant guy who worked his way all the way up to the presidency. Forget about his policies and his politics. How come so many white people can't even admit that Obama is every bit an inspiration as Ben Carson? They ask us, you voted for Barack Obama, but what about this Ben Carson guy? You can't pick our black people. You can't tell us enough about that Obama. What about our guy? Both grew up poor, both are black men who pulled themselves up. But one is batshit crazy. Barack Obama didn't have to try to stab somebody to become president. Well, after Ben Carson didn't pass muster, Republicans said, fuck it, we tried offering you a black option, but now we're doubling down on the racist one. Trump's agenda might as well be called, I'm gonna undo everything that nigga Obama did. I've never seen anybody so obsessed with a black man who ain't a Kardashian. White people like black people who black people like after they're dead. It never fails. White people have terrible taste in black people until we get to about age 75. But then they start liking the people we like. That is, after they're old and feeble. Better yet, after they're dead. In other words, they like the people we like after they're no longer a threat. They started digging Muhammad Ali when he was close to dead. Then he became an icon. They liked Martin Luther King after he was dead. Now everybody loves him, but at the time, he was unpopular with whites, just like Black Lives Matter is today. In 1966, a poll of white adults found that only 36% felt that MLK was helping the civil rights cause, and half thought he was hurting it. Back then, they condemned him. Now they quote him. Every black person who got a holiday was somebody that scared white people. Nobody will ever remember Ben Carson. History will remember the people who spoke out against what was going on. That's who they'll remember. In the meantime, white people will continue to pick black people who make them feel comfortable. They'll pick the wrong black dude for the token black Republican presidential candidates, and they'll pick the wrong black dude in the lineup, sure. But don't count on recognition of who was an important black dude during their lifetime. Only dead black dudes get their own stamp. Note to self, if whites start praising me and give me honors, I better get my affairs in order because my days are numbered. Chapter 22, Your Bill of Rights. Here's the Bill of Rights. Freedom of religion, speech, and press. Right to bear arms. Don't have to let soldiers shack up in your house. Prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures. Protection of rights to life, liberty, and property. Right to a speedy trial with impartial jury, etc. in criminal cases. Right to a trial by a jury in civil cases. Excessive bail, fines, and punishments forbidden. Other rights are kept by the people. The powers not delegated to the government are reserved to the state or the people. Here's your Bill of Rights. Sorry, white people will tell you you have the same rights as they do, but what happens when you try to exercise them? That's a different story. Am I being extreme? First Amendment. Did Sandra Bland have the right of free speech when she was taken into custody by a cop who didn't like the way she spoke? Second Amendment. Did Philando Castile have the right to bear arms when he was shot for having a gun? Third Amendment. Do we have the right to not have the Redcoats take up residence in our homes? Is that what they called gentrification back then? Okay, to be fair, this one is mostly soft. But if they were Redcoats around, you know they'd be fucking with us.